Thanks to Savannah for making a little video up there for me. I'm going to play that again at the end. So some of you know that I headed down to Panama a couple weeks ago. It's just a repeat of a trip I did last year. So I want to share a little bit about that trip, share a little bit about what I was able to do. And really, you know, as with most of these things, it's probably more about what God was able to do through just a really good team that I was lucky to be part of. I talk a lot about, about giving and how do you give and how do you not be selfish in your giving. And I stumbled onto this last night by Ralph Waldo Emerson. He says that it's one of the most beautiful compensations of life that no man can sincerely try to help another without helping himself. That's missions in a nutshell for me, because it's hard sometimes to even be sure when you go out into the world and do something like I had a chance to do, to really separate whether you're really helping someone else or you're really helping yourself, because I always come home feeling like I got more out of it than the people that I went to help. But I'm convinced that it's at that point that I decide that I'm going to go for myself that I'll lose it, you know. So I'm learning over time and trying to learn about the importance of going out and helping others with no regard for myself, and then letting God reflect that back on me if he chooses to, and he seems to do that frequently. This is the team that I went with. So you've got, walk up here where I can see a little better. So you've got a couple of doctors, ophthalmologists here that have a lot of years of experience. This guy right here has done over 30,000 cataract surgeries, and he's not that old yet, so he is quite the guy. This guy lives up in Indianapolis. He's another ophthalmologist that does cataract surgery. And then this couple here, James, is a coworker of mine here in Columbus, and his wife, Betsy, is another ophthalmologist. So the point of the trip is to go down and help these folks see a little better, not philosophically or anything like that, but literally with their eyes. So where I'm going is, if you don't know where Panama is at, it's right here. It's a great place to build a canal if you were going to do such a thing, because that's where it's nice and skinny there. So here's a blow-up of Panama. Here's Panama City, and you can actually see they've kind of shown a little picture here where the canal breaks through. Where we're visiting is over here in David. We would say David. And if you go straight north out of David to this little city right here called Boquete, it's right at the base of Vulcan Baru, which is a dormant volcano down there. It's a completely beautiful place. I wanted to show you guys just some of the pictures I was able to snap while I was up in the mountain area. So I would go out for walks or runs each day, and this was just a shot that I thought was beautiful. One day I was in a coffee plantation, and there's a mom there. By the way, if you're down there and you're making a minimum wage, that's about $1 an hour. And so this young boy is hanging out in the coffee plantation with his mom while she's making $1 an hour. This is the kind of stuff that just grows everywhere down there. It's sort of a tropical rainforest kind of thing. And so it's just flowers like this just all over the place. There's some bananas. I'm actually standing in a coffee plantation, and you may wonder why there's a banana tree there, but coffee plants need some shade, so they don't look organized at all. You go into these coffee plantations, and there's coffee trees, sometimes in rows, but kind of intermixed in them are just a variety, a hodgepodge of other kinds of trees that give them just a little shade that they need. You know, that's not somebody's garden. That's just the way it looks down there. That's a valley in behind where we were doing surgery. I walked down in one day and just snapped that picture. It's just the way it looks. That leaf is just as big as it looks, too. It was like, it's huge. There's looking down. One morning before we started doing surgeries, we went down and overlooked the city of Boquete, and that you can see the river. It kind of runs through there. There's another shot of the city. Again, just an amazing area. This rainbow is kind of cool. You see blue skies there in the background. In the afternoon, because you're so close to the ocean on both sides, as the air comes off of the Atlantic, I'm sorry, off of the Pacific, and rolls up over the mountain, the volcano, which we're on the east side of the volcano, it causes this strange phenomenon where it rains. It doesn't really rain, though. It's like you don't get wet, you just get damp a little bit. And so that's a volcano from that. There's some strange name they've got for it. But, I mean, it'll do it when there's not a cloud in the sky. That day there were clouds. But some days there'll be no clouds at all, but it'll just be raining. It's really kind of cool. Some other nice pictures. I went up to 5,000 feet one morning, and I was looking there, and I feel like I'm really close to the top of that mountain. And then I found out that it's over 11,000 feet. So apparently I was still 5 hours hike from the top. So my plan, if I get to go back again next year, is to you set up kind of a day trip. They'll set up for you, and you can go up to the top. So one of the doctors was walking across the driveway there, carrying some supplies in, and looked down and saw that on his arm. It was kind of a surprise. So and he was very much alive and excited. So. That I heard a scream from the back of the dorm one morning, and it was the ophthalmologist Betsy going completely ballistic because she'd seen this spider. And to give you a feel for how big it is, I'm telling you, that's a serious spider. That dot you're seeing there is its eye is so big, that's like spider red eye, you know, like we get. That's its eye reflecting off of the flash. So I told you they do coffee down there. Where's Jeff at? Jeff, there you go, Jeff. That was just for you. So that's the coffee beans drying out there. And actually, if you look closely in the background, if I can get my cursor over, there's the coffee bean workers chilling out a little bit because they just spread these out and they're going to let them dry for a little bit in the sun. So, okay, so now what are we really doing here? Anybody ever had cataract surgery in here? There we go. So, Judy, you want to come up and kind of take care of this for me? Okay. So in your eye, you've got this pupil in the middle, which the pupil is not a thing. It's an identification of a location. Light goes through the middle of your eye, goes into the back of your eye, and it flips. And yes, that really does happen. But you can see in this case, there's this white spot in the middle of that pupil, and that's a cataract. That's the problem. Isn't that great? That is, I was the guinea pig. That's me, in case you didn't recognize. And so we'll dilate an eye. So they dilated my left eye so that they could practice on me, not to do cataract surgery, but to do all the measurements. So you can get a sense for what happens when you dilate an eye there. So so these are the two measurements that we do. So here's the lens in the middle of the eye. So the light comes in through your cornea out here. Comes through a little hole in your iris, goes through a lens, and then it focuses on the back of the eye. Well, this lens is what turns white, and that's a cataract. And so the doctors have to go in and literally remove that lens and then put in a new one. And so to do that and keep the optics right so you can see well, you have to measure the curvature, which is done with this little green machine here. And then you've got to use a thing called an A-scan, and you measure the depth of the eye. It's a little light that bounces off the back of the eye, a little laser. And measures the depth of the eye. So that's why I'm there, because I can't really do anything else in terms of the surgery. But they need that measurement done on everybody, and so kind of anybody could do that because it's really easy to do. So that's why I lucked out and got to go. There's our little makeshift operating room here in the upper right. There's a picture of the doctor looking. Up here is a really fancy microscope they use to look through while they're doing the surgery. So they're not actually looking at the eye. They're looking through a microscope while they do it. Then here's a post-op area. So, and no, this is my friend James, and James is not 7 feet tall, as it would appear. This lady is just absolutely tiny. I bet she couldn't have weighed more than about 60 pounds. I think she was the funniest thing. So there she is before surgery, and then here she is all looking all cool and happy there afterwards. So, some more pictures of some of my favorite people we worked on. This guy here. It's from the area called Comarca, which is basically the really, really poor region. So we took a whole busload of people. They took a bus out and got a whole busload of people that couldn't see very well and brought them back, and then we tried to identify if any of them could be fixed with cataract surgery. This guy right here is really, really an interesting character. He really couldn't see anything. He could see light, like he could shine light in his eyes, and he couldn't see. When they went in and pulled his lens out to do the cataract surgery, his eye wasn't particularly healthy, so they couldn't put a lens back in. Now, you can see without a lens, but it's like you're going to need some really, really stout glasses to see without a lens. But they decided that's what they would do. And it was the craziest thing. Now, he's wearing glasses right there, but those are actually more for reading, is why he has those on. When he got out of the surgery, Dr. Dan there at his left kind of waved at him and said, can you see my hands? And the guy was like, see, yeah. And he was like, really? And he stepped back about 10 feet and said, you know, how many fingers? And he said, what is it, cinco? Whatever five is. I should know that. And the guy was like, cinco, right away. So for some reason, that guy has an eye shape that can live without, can actually see really well without a lens. So that guy walked away seeing things he's not seen in several years. So this guy right here is just another one from the Camarca that, I mean, he was, I mean, that's his one pair of clothes that he would wear pretty much every day, you know. So another guy here from the Camarca. This guy, he had that smile every time we saw him. He just looked that way all the time, so. And this guy's a little bit of a different story. He actually lives closer by, kind of a friend of the mission kind of deal. And so we basically told him if we had time at the end of the week, we would slip you in and do some work on you. And there, you can see him and his wife there. I mean, they were absolutely ecstatic. We were able to get him in on the last day. And that was the day after. So he had his patch off and he was seeing really, really well. So he was pretty doggone happy. You know, this isn't a movie set, and they're heading out to film the next scene. So these are all the guys from the Camarca, which were brought in on a school bus. And so everybody you see with sunglasses, they had surgery the previous day. They've had their post-op checkout the next day. Everything's working well, so they're taking them back out to their homes. So, yeah, it was a pretty awesome experience there. Okay, and then this last one, make sure I'm, we'll bounce back to this. So this is a really interesting story. The girl on the left is about 23 or something like that, and that's her sister on the right. Several of you have heard me talk about this story, but it really had an impact on me. Does she need free surgery? What do you do? We're dealing with people that have absolutely no money, and that's kind of the intent of going down there. And then you have someone like this walk in. You kind of ask, you know, a question like, do we help this person? She's got braces. She's wearing some real fashionable clothing. She's got ginormous diamond-looking earrings on there. But we begin to ask some questions about what kind of health service does she have available. Her problem is not a cataract, but on her left eye, she has a thing called a pterygium, which means that skin starts growing across your eye. It's this kind of really strange skin. It's a very common problem in Panama for some reason. And it will eventually completely blind the eye and cover up the eye. And so she had surgery 2 months ago, saved up a lot of money, paid to get that done, and it was almost back covering her eye again because the surgery hadn't been done right. And to give you a flavor for what these people are up against, these are stats they told us, so I'll just take them at face value. In the city of David, which is a big city, like Indianapolis-sized city, they have one ophthalmologist one day a month come into that city to do cataract surgery. So, you know, in Indianapolis, we have no telling how many, probably 100 ophthalmologists or something in Indianapolis doing surgery pretty much every day of the week. And they have one person one day a month. It's very, very difficult for them to get access to surgery. To make it even worse, the one guy that did do her surgery didn't do it right. And so Dr. Dan kind of looked at her and he said, come back on Friday. If we can at all squeeze you in, we will. And they were able to squeeze her in, and so we'll find out next year whether or not it worked or not. But the interesting part is how God works in cool ways, because she has this sister on the right. Her sister is actually an English professor, so she teaches English in Panama. And so her sister came up and was so amazed by what was going on at the mission that she decided she would stay the entire week. So her sister stayed there as a translator for us, which was just a massive help. And she worked in the pre-op, post-op area the whole week translating, and before we left, I mean, she made a big deal to us that she wanted to know exactly when we were coming back next year because she's going to come back and do it again. So it's just a really, really awesome experience there. Let's move on there. I want to tell you about the things I've learned and some of the challenges. So here we've got this team of people. We've kind of thrown away everything that we're working through in terms of our backgrounds and our churches and, you know, what this kind of core belief is of our little group of Christians we hang out with. And we've kind of thrown all that away, and we all gathered together to go down with a very clear focus. And it's something that I struggle with, to know exactly how as Christians do we make sure we're not getting in the way of God and we're letting things happen. This guy right here is... I'll give you a flavor for how he functions in life. He's a pretty conservative guy, okay? He's what you would kind of classify as a conservative Christian. And we were talking about politics at one point in the week, And he made a comment to us. He's like, yeah, he's like, I'm not a big fan of the Republican Party. And we said, oh, yeah, really? Why is that? And he goes, he said, it's just way too liberal for me, which I thought was just a really funny statement about where he was at. And, yeah, it was interesting. And then you've got Ray Ann, this lady here. This just, the way she's kind of hid behind the scenes, that's just who she is. She's the most giving, interesting lady. Her and I have a bond because her background is non-instrumental Church of Christ, which is the same as mine. So we kind of have that bond and have walked through that together. And she's just an amazing lady. And then you've got Jim and Betsy, who are believers, but certainly don't have a close walk with God. And so we've got all these different people, and you're trying to figure out, how do you work together? How do you serve God with all these different beliefs and all these different ways of looking at service? And Dan right here is what really stood out to me. Dan has that challenge of figuring out, how does he accomplish leading a team to do the things we did? By the way, we were able to do 100 surgeries this year. They said in the Comarca, which is basically the hill country, the government will pay occasionally. They have some government health care. The government will pay for surgeries to happen out in the Comarca. And last year they paid for 30 for the entire year. And we were able, Dan was able to lead a team to do 100 in 1 week. So, you know, he's doing a really, really amazing thing for that country. And watching him work through and weave the ability to lead a group of Christians that have this massive, diverse background. You know, for example, Jim and Betsy, pretty loose with their language. And so, you know, that you got a couple here that are, you know, you got the occasional cuss word flying here and there and that kind of stuff. And so then one morning, as a result of that, you've got this guy leading a talk. No, I'm sorry. Actually, it was somebody else. Somebody else was leading a talk on the importance of not cussing. And so, it was obvious why that was being taught. And so you've got that, you know, that kind of tension going on there. And to watch Dan pull that together. And I look at our community here, and it really makes me think a lot about us, because we are really, really a diverse group of people here. Lots of different beliefs and thoughts and backgrounds coming from all walks. And so I watched Dan closely while I was down there. I felt like I gained a little more this year about how you deal with that. So, and I want to kind of summarize my lesson from this year about this diversity and about how you deal with these people with this slide. I was looking forever for this last night, and I finally found it. John's talking to Jesus, and he says, "Teacher, we saw someone driving out demons in your name, and we told him to stop because he was not one of us." Jesus said, "Don't stop him, for no one who does a miracle in my name can in the next moment say anything bad about me. For whoever is not against us is for us. Truly I tell you, anyone who gives you a cup of water in my name because you belong to the Messiah will certainly not lose their reward." I think I have to fight with this, and I think as a community we've got to fight through this. We've got to realize that as we're all walking toward Christ, there's going to be times that someone else is going to be trying to walk toward Christ and we're not going to see eye to eye with them. You guys know what I'm talking about? They're trying to do the beautiful things for God, and you're trying to do the beautiful things for God in your life, and you disagree with them. I'm going to give you a good example here, so I hope some of you guys can grasp this. We had a missionary, and I feel really bad, I can't remember her name. We had this young missionary gal that's working down there. She's from Florida. And then in this picture here, actually here she is talking to this. In this picture we have this guy back here who's another missionary from the U.S., and he's down there teaching people how to evangelize. Okay. So this young lady, the reason she went down to Panama was because she was living in Florida. She was a school teacher, and she knows how to teach Spanish really well. She speaks Spanish really well. And she really wants to go to Panama and help this process. Because in Panama, if all you can speak is the native indigenous language and you can't speak Spanish, you're going to struggle to ever get beyond that dollar an hour minimum wage. It's going to be very, very difficult, and it's not a very easy life for them. And so her goal is to try to help the indigenous folks take that step from their indigenous language to Spanish. And then she also, at the same time, is helping folks that speak Spanish, so they're kind of next up the chain. She's helping teach them to speak English. she's very, very much into this idea of just helping people progress and loving people that way. It's something that is a lot like our community here, I think, and I kind of resonate with the way she functions. This group here is very different than that. That gentleman there came into us, and the reason he was there was they were having an uprising in the country. The folks from the Camargo, we couldn't take them back home, so we had done surgery on them. We were wanting to load them on the bus to take them back home. They couldn't go back home because the other folks were upset at the government, and they had blocked the road, and there was fires in the road and all kinds of stuff, so they were better off to stay with us. It wasn't really a dangerous thing. It just was a nuisance more than anything. And so since these people heard that there were some kind of captive folks there that couldn't get away, and they're learning to evangelize, they came there, and they told us the two things they wanted to do is they were going to do skits to teach the people about God, and then they were going to go down to the city afterwards, and they were going to hand out tracts about God, okay? Now, you know, if I had to list the top five things that don't jazz me up about evangelism, you know, probably skits and tracts would be pretty high on that list, right, you know? In fact, truthfully, when he started telling us what they were doing, I actually thought he was joking. I almost kind of snickered, and luckily I caught myself. But I'll tell you what, guys, if our reaction to this isn't love and blessings and saying, hey, you know what, maybe I don't see eye to eye with you, but you guys are not against God, certainly. You are for God. If we can't get along with those folks, we're going to be hurting ourselves. If you remember last year, you guys remember me talking about how my friend James, one of the reasons I went down there was because James needed to be protected from the Christians. Anybody remember that talk? Right? Yeah, he kind of said, you know, the Christians were wigging him out, and he kind of wanted somebody to help protect him from them. This guy didn't go last year, but this was the guy. This is the guy he was talking about. Okay. This guy here was all over him the previous year, all kinds of stuff and theological differences and kind of this kind of stuff. This year, at the end of the year, I walked up to James. I said, hey, James, I got something to tell you. I'm pretty impressed with Dr. Henry. I said, he's amazing. He can do a cataract surgery in 10 minutes. And I'm telling you, get on YouTube, type in cataract surgery, watch it. You'll be blown away if this guy can do one in 10 minutes. He is an amazing doctor, having done 30,000 of them. Absolute deep love for God. Really, really neat guy. I told James, I hear what you're saying about Dr. Henry, but I like Dr. Henry. I kind of walked away from this week really liking Dr. Henry. And James said back to me, he said, you know what? He said, I've been thinking about it. I like Dr. Henry too. You know, and that was like the pinnacle of the week for me, was to see that even through their differences, and I mean, James and Henry are, well, they're way apart from each other, but even through their differences, they're able to do eye surgery together, do beautiful things, had a great time together, and they're pumped about meeting again 12 months from now in Panama and serving God again down there. It's a great lesson for us to learn. We can get through those differences. I can get through. And I'm kidding you guys. I'm the worst one here. It doesn't take much. It doesn't take Doug doing very much until it'll be something that I want to, whatever, right, Doug? Doug's seen it. And it's just not needed. It's just not needed. We can get along, and we can do beautiful things even through our differences. So, with that said, I'm going to pray. If anybody wants to come up and chat with me any more about this afterwards, feel free to. It's about 12 after, so after the prayer, if you've got kids upstairs, you can head up there and pick them up. Guys, have a great week, and thanks for coming. God, we really just want to give our lives to you. God, help us to not miss the point. Help us to realize that the enemy isn't somebody trying to serve you in a different way than we want them to serve. But the enemy is somebody trying to not serve you. The enemy is the world that's trying to pull us into a dark place. Don't let us miss that, God. God, help us to be open to listening to others that have differences of opinions. Help us to listen to them clearly and to realize that it may very well be you talking through them to us. God, help me. Help me to hear it and to absorb it and to make the changes when I'm doing things that are wrong, that I'm doing things that while they might be things for you, there are better ways. And if I'll just listen to you or listen to the wise counsel around me, I'll hear those things. God, help us as a community as we reach out into this this city of Columbus. Help us to be tight and be bonded. Help people to realize how beautiful you are through the beauty they see in us. God, I got to see some really great things down in Panama. I saw some beautiful vegetation. I saw some beautiful sights. But then on a deeper level, I saw some beautiful hearts and people giving it up for you. And I saw people walking away changed, people seeing that couldn't see before. And God, I think that that probably goes deeper than that. It goes beyond the physical and goes into a deeper level where they're sensing a love from you and sensing a love from your people that will forever change their life. God, we ask that you'll guide us. We ask that you will bless us and bless the world around us. Through Christ we pray. Amen.